and welcome to the Sportscast, May 22nd, 2018. And if you haven't yet, please subscribe on YouTube and iTunes. And if you are on iTunes, please leave a review so it can help us out with the rankings. And today's guest, very special guest, huge guest, we have Julian Gonzalez from BN Sports. He's a field reporter that covers U.S. soccer and many more. Julian, welcome to the Sportscast.
So, Diego, man, thank you so much, man. It's a pleasure to join you guys, and just thrilled whenever I have a chance to talk about sports, especially, of course, the beautiful game of soccer, man.
Julian, can you tell us, like the audience, a little bit about yourself? What are you up to these days?
Well, you know what? I've been in this business for 22 years, man. I feel like an old dinosaur when I compare myself to youngsters like you, Santiago. And, you know, it's been a whirlwind starting my career in a small market in Western Colorado back in 96 and, covering the MLS in its very first season. I always kid around with, like players like Marcelo Balboa. And I'm like, man, I saw what you're a youngster. I covered you now. You know, he's a colleague working for Univision. It's just amazing, and you know how time has really flown. And you know, from there, Colorado got us. You know, jumped out to Fort Myers, Florida. Worked at the ABC station there. Made my dream gig working back in Miami at the CBS station in Miami, covering everything. My favorite team that makes me suffer more than any, the Miami Dolphins. And from there, jumped out to Gold TV. Gold TV. I was there for 8 years, and as an assistant news director, reporter, anchor, clean toilets, did everything there. And from there, I moved out from Miami out here to the West Coast, beautiful Seattle. And ever since, I've been a freelance reporter for a lot of stations, almost a full-time reporter in a sense for BN Sports, with my main duties covering the U.S. national team. But I also do stuff. I've done stuff for CNN International and Fox Sports. So, keeping myself busy, and it's, I get paid to do what a lot of guys just dream about now, and for you also, just covering sports.
You know, one of the most, probably, maybe one of the most memorable moments in sports, but it's not a positive one, is seeing USA being eliminated and not able to qualify to the World Cup. You were in Trinidad, weren't you?
Yeah, brother, I was there, man, and I was, it's one of those moments I'll never forget, one of my top memories, maybe like you said, not maybe the best memories in my entire journalism career, I was 15 feet away from the USA bench and just seeing dejection and just seeing a surreal moment, I guess. One of those moments that you'll always remember where you were, what you were doing when it happened. I was a sideline reporter for that game, and it's, I was reading something recently, Kristen Pulisic, he's the one person that really, comes to mind when I think about that game, not from over his amazing goal, but it's just the dejection, himself, Brad Gazan, some of the veteran players out of the pitch, just in total disbelief. And, another thing I'll remember about that game, Santiago, was, when the game ended, had some of the players like Brad Gazan, Alejandro Bedoya, just looking at me because I had the headset on and I could hear the other games through the studio, the Mexico game, and they wanted to know the results. And they just looking at me, asking me what was the, was an update on those games. And I said, I just never forget just saying, look, you got one more chance. And Guardado of Mexico has a free kick from outside the 18. This is your last chance in a sense. And when they looked at me, I just, shook my head from side to side saying, nothing came of it. The opportunity for Mexico to give them a chance, the USA, and just the pain, of seeing their, the pain in their faces is something I'll never forget. And, it's unfortunate for all of us that love the game, especially that follow USA soccer, Santiago.
Was it like before the game, did you have a hunch feeling that things might not go our way? I mean, the team was going through a lot, through the past year. I know that Jurgen Klinsmann got fired in 16, but when Bruce Arena came in, obviously he has to come back and get everything going. But did you have a hunch, like, we might not make it?
No, I think I was probably a little bit like you, that it's, you're like, they're going to win this. Because I remember looking at Trinidad's side, And I'm like, God, these guys look so young. I mean, these are, you know, guys that they just, you know, basically maybe, you know, working at a 7-Eleven, you know, you think they're so young. You're like, the United States comes out serious on this pitch, which was soggy, if you might remember, because it had rained the night before, the day before. You know, they got a good chance. But one thing I'll tell you, Santiago, is that I wasn't shocked, man, at the final thing, at the final result, because of the way the United States had been playing leading up to that match. As you rightly remember, you know, the United States, some of their games, they just didn't have that, I don't know, that killer instinct. They didn't have that urgency. And Santiago, I'll tell you, and I've said this story before, and I said in our post-game show, one of the telling things for me was United States, if you might remember, played in New York a qualifier against Costa Rica, and they got whooped. The following game, 2 days later, fly out to, I believe it was Honduras, and I had a one-on-one with Michael Bradley, and, you know, we're in the team hotel, and, you know, ask him a question, generic question about the team, and I said, my next question to Michael was, Michael, after what happened in Costa Rica, where the team seemed like it didn't have a sense of urgency, it didn't have, like, energy in that game. You know, they came out Costa Rica, the Ticos, they punched their face. I didn't say quite like that, but it's, do you feel like in coming into this game, it's kind of your responsibility and the veterans to kind of get this team back going, back on the right track? And I'll never forget Michael, just because doing an interview with Michael is very tough, because you don't know if he's in a good mood, a mad mood. He's very serious. And he paused for 2 seconds, looked at me just straight through me. He, you know, like if he had, you know, beams of laser beams, he would have just, you know, just melted me away. He goes, I totally disagree. And I go, you totally disagree, Michael? And he goes, yeah, I totally disagree with your assessment. I think you're wrong. I think we came out there. And Santiago, I'll tell you, that 1 second I said to myself, I think his idea of urgency and energy is different than mine. Because if I think of players like one of my colleagues that I work with, Christopher Sullivan, you think of the teams with, you know, Todd Ramos, you think of Eric Winalda, you know, even Alexis Lalas, those guys played with a chip on their shoulder. And there's one thing I always said about this team in the hexagonal stage of this, of the qualifiers, is they never played with that. They never played with urgency, like saying, you know what, we're going to grab these guys by the throat, we're going to step on it, we're going to squeeze it, and we're going to, you know, go for the jugular in a sense to win this game. And I'll tell you, Santiago, you know, I know it's a long explanation what I just told you. That is why I believe that I wasn't too surprised that they failed to qualify, because you never saw that sense of urgency in them throughout the final stage of qualifying.
Yeah, I mean, it was shaky, and I kind of, you know, saw the U.S. team going through a transition phase out of, like, the Landon Donovan days. And obviously, you know, we're using Clint Dempsey, you know, for these past couple of years, but it feels like we're going to a new phase. And do you think the CONCACAF has gotten better?
Oh, yeah, man. I absolutely, you know, I just did an interview last week with radio stations from Panama. Their big concern is the health of Roman Torres, who plays here for the Sounders. And we were talking in general terms of, you know, they asked him basically the same thing you did. And I saw it from an outsider. I told him, look, as a gringo reporter, in a sense, I followed the United States, rather, since the 70s. I was a little boy. I mean, I remember when it was just a cakewalk for Mexico. And it's just the opportunities these players have had to play in other countries to develop their skills. Like in Panama, Roman Torres played in Colombia. You know, some of these players have played in Europe. And I think it's good for everybody. And in a sense, I think it's good for the United States. I know it's weird for me to say, Santiago. It's crazy to say. In a way, I'm glad the United States, in a sense, didn't qualify for the World Cup. And what I mean by that is that everybody around them has gotten so good. And we always relied on some of those older players, whether it's, you know, Michael Bradley, Josie, Tim Howard. And by having this chance to kind of recharge themselves, now they're giving some of the young players an opportunity to play. And that's what you see now in, you know, in the CONCACAF. Some young players that are getting an opportunity, whether you play for Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, playing here in the MLS and getting this opportunity. And at the end of the day, it's better for the United States.
Yeah, I agree. And I think like the MLS has helped out the CONCACAF. I think they're kind of not been awarded that. Okay, MLS, wow, you're doing great for the region, but it's also good for us. I mean, I like competition. It really helps us, makes us stronger. Who do you think should be like the next U.S. coach?
Boy, that's a loaded one. You know what? I'll tell you what. I'm getting a little inside. I won't name names, but the former players that I talked to, former players, I won't mention names like Christopher Sullivan, you know, who I'm very close to, some other players, they all believe, and I believe, Todd Ramos should be the new head coach. But at that same, at that, with that same, with that said, I mean, there's so many, I think, other USA coaches, American coaches that should be given an opportunity. You know, I was very fond of, I'm very fond of Jason Christ. I'm very fond of, you know, Caleb Porter. And not to mention, you know, out in Sporting KC, it's, I can't believe it just skipped my mind.
Ramiz?
And I was just talking about him the other day. Yeah, Ramiz, yeah.
Yeah.
Ramiz, I think he's a splendid coach. But I'll tell you what, you know what, Santiago? Will the new U.S. soccer, you know, led by Carlos Cordero, will they accept having an American coach where we've seen before where USA, even fans, get enamored with foreign entities, foreign players, foreign coaches? So for me, Tab Ramos, because we've all seen what he's done with the youth teams. I mean, that's just, you know, my opinions over Mies, who I totally love. I think he's a splendid, splendid young coach, quote unquote.
Yeah, and with Chad Ramos turned down the Inter position recently, back in January or back in last year in November, because he wanted to be the coach. He didn't want to have that interim tag, which I'm glad he turned it down, because, you know, you want to be head coach.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct. Why have that kind of, you don't know who's going to take over U.S. soccer at that point and all that stuff. You know, everything's going to change. You know, the interaction will be, you know, he's just, you know, the caretaker right now, U.S. soccer. You know, after the World Cup, everything's settled down. That's when U.S. soccer really focuses on them. And then you throw your hat in the ring, you know, and I'm sure, you know, Tab obviously would be on the top of the list for U.S. soccer, man.
You know, and because of that Trinidad game, there was so much interest of, you know, there were 8 candidates for the U.S. For the U.S. soccer president position. And, you know, you saw Winalda, you saw Carl Martino, you saw some lawyers and some business people. But U.S. soccer, like, they voted it from within. Like, they picked someone from within, Carlos Cordero, which he's, it's kind of iffy because he is from within, but he's also an outsider. But Kathy Carter was more from the inside, I mean, I kind of thought. But U.S. soccer, like, the voters didn't want to go for the reformers. Were you surprised?
No, I think, you know what, I think there's skepticism, and let's say Carlos Cordero, you know, even Kathy, which was soon, but if you look at Carlos Cordero, he was in a way, Studio Galati's, that's his guy, that's his boy, you know, he was the one, he paraded Carlos around, the vote getters, the people involved with making decisions at U.S. Soccer, the board members, so I was not shocked at all, when I saw guys like Carl Martino, you know, Eric Winalda, even here from Seattle Hope Solo getting into the mix, I'm like, they don't have any chance. You know, I think the good thing that Carlos did is, or U.S. soccer in general, is that they're kind of dividing everything up, whereas Sunil kind of was the don of everything and, you know, the hiring, everything. I think in a way it's good to kind of separate powers and get somebody that knows soccer, you know, in charge of everything, of the soccer side or the playing the sports side of it. You know, for me, I'll be honest with you, I like Jurgen Klinsmann. And, you know, that's, you know, one guy that Sunil really liked. And he did pick him, so you got to give him credit for that. I know a lot of people are not enamored with Jurgen Klinsmann, but, you know, in that sense, I thought Sunil did a good job, but the rest, I think it's good divided. Now, can Carlos Cordero kind of change people's minds? Because everybody still think he's part of the establishment or the swamp. Let me put it, in today's terms, he's part of the swamp. We're just going to have to wait and see, brother, because it is going to be interesting.
Yeah, and he's focused on the World Cup 2026. And back to Klinsmann, looking back at it, I actually liked him now more than when like he had the job. It's funny because I was iffy with him. But then I heard from Stoke City, Jeff Cameron. He was saying that
Jeff Cameron would push
like the players to play. And once Bruce Arena got back into the helm, everyone kind of laxed out, you know. So and like he encouraged players to play in Europe. Yes, I know it'd be great to support like MLS, but Europe is still at the highest level. And that's where you're able to push yourself harder. And, I mean, I didn't mind for American players going to Europe. I thought, like, it was a good thing. But now it seems like it's good to stay here. And I don't know. It depends who you ask, right?
You know what? I think, dude, you're totally right. You're too right. The thing about, I think, Jurgen, one of the biggest criticisms, like, for example, after, I'm trying to think, what game was it? Panama? No. Let me go a little bit back. Like a game after two, after he got fired, I'm trying to remember what game it was. Anyways, I talked to Bedoya after the game. The problem with Jurgen is that you never knew when you're going to play, if you're going to play. And he'd tell you a half an hour before the game started, oh, by the way, you're going to play. And you know what? You're going to play as a number five. Well, let me take the, I guess U.S. we say six, but a five in South America holding a defensive mid, and he goes, some players didn't like that. You know, he just never knew where you're going to play or not, da da da. And I thought, for me, what's wrong with that? You know, keeps you on your toes. So, in a way, I really agreed with Jeff Cameron, and you could see it. One thing I will tell you, Santiago, the final two games for the United States, especially the game against Trinidad, I'll tell you what, Jeff is a very accessible guy. I mean, he'll talk, he has great sound bites. He's very outspoken, as you know. And you just saw his face, and I looked at his face the game against Trinidad, maybe 2 days before the game of practice, and I go, you know, he'd say, hey, Jeff, got a second? And he wouldn't even answer, which you usually, hey, man, what's going on? And I go, he's not going to start. And you could see the displeasure. So when he came out and he hit hard at Bruce Arena, I was totally surprised with that one at all. You know, and I think as far as what you're talking about, players playing in Europe, Santiago, I don't know, man. I prefer players playing in Europe, and that's what Jurgen brought. You know, test yourself. And I have a problem, I'll tell you. A lot of people might agree. I have a problem with Jordan Morris playing here in the MLS. I'll tell you what. I think he stayed here, obviously, as you know. His dad is on the medical team here for the Sounders. And I think it was just a comfort. He has his girlfriend here, and he knows where everything is. And I like the players to be pushed, man. Go to Europe, man, and, you know, try to fail. It might not work out. You know, look at Bill Hamid right now playing in Denmark. He hasn't played, really, you know, since he left DC United. But I'm the type, go to Europe. You're playing top level. And look at the players that are, you know, going to play against Bolivia or called up for the Bolivia friendly next week. All those kids. I mean, mind you, some of those MLS teams didn't, you know, call somebody, wouldn't let some of those players go. But you know what? Those players that are coming in from Europe are seasoned, and they, you know, it's just at a different level. I don't know. I prefer players come, you know, going out there and test themselves against the highest competition.
I agree, and I remember when like DeMarcus Beasley played Champions League soccer, Clint Dempsey playing for Fulham, and then like he tried with Tottenham. He did his best, even though Tottenham didn't really like him apparently at the end. But you got to push yourself. And you're right about Morris. He had the chance, but then he flipped back. And which U.S. team was the best U.S. team? My opinion was the 2009 Confed Cup U.S. team.
Yeah, you know what? I would probably say I'd agree with you, and I think you know, it's a great memory. Remember, in that Confederations Cup, a lot of things, you know, fell into place for the United States, you know, against Egypt and stuff. And, yeah, it was a team that, you know, really gelled and played well, you know, the final against Brazil, even when the United States went. I don't know about you, but when they went up 2-0, I'm like, oh, I think we're going to lose.
We're up too early in the game. There's still one half ahead.
you're scoring too early, hold on. You know, and you look at, going into, it was going into halftime, they're up 2-0, and I just said to myself, man, here comes what separates Brazil, Italy, Germany, used to be Argentina from the rest of the world, that mental fortitude. I got this in the bag, whereas, you know, teams like the United States up 2-0, teams in South America, wherever, even Africa, Europe, when they are beating the bigger clubs or bigger nations, in the back of their mind, they're like, oh, you know, did we score too early? Is it going to come back? So I am, you know what? I'm old, man. You're like 22, I think, Santiago.
I am 33, not too old.
But I... Well, then, you know what? I'm going to go with the old school teams, the 94 team, 93 team. And the only reason why, and I'll tell you why, it was not a more talented team than theirs right now, but it was a team that played with heart, man. A team with a chip on their shoulders, man. And going back to how we started this interview, that's what the current team lacked. And I just love those teams. If anything, show some fight. And that's what we don't see from, you know, the current teams.
Yeah, you know, back then, like, I know it was like mid-90s after the World Cup. When, like, the MLS came, was that something you were like, wow, this is really happening? I mean, I know, like, the NASL existed, like, about 10 years prior, but, I mean, I remember that first opening day. That was so exciting. It was like the World Cup coming back again.
Right? Yeah, no, I still remember, you know, again, like I mentioned, I started my career in Western Colorado, and I drove across the, you know, the Rocky Mountains just to my dumb little camcorder. The station, the sports direct didn't care about soccer. I'm like, I don't care. So I went over, you know, just to cover the Rapids back then. I was excited. But, I mean, I still remember back in those days, you know, that you're like, how is this sport going to grow? I mean, if you remember, Santiago, those guys weren't getting paid anything. Some of those guys were making 16 grand a year. And I know a few players that would bunk together in a one-bedroom apartment, like four or five players, all sharing rooms because they didn't have money. I'm like, well, I don't know if this team's going to – I mean, this league is going to, you know, grow to where it is now. It's just amazing. And, you know, I was a big fan of the Miami Fusion. That's still my favorite MLS team, with the teams with, you know, Carlos Valderrama and stuff that, you know – even, you know, Chris Henderson, who's a sporting director here for the Sounders, who I spoke to 2 weeks ago, and I told him, man, you should go back to Miami once Beckham brings a team. Man, I loved my time, but wasn't that crazy? I go, yeah, man, the MLS, what it was back then to what it is now, it's, you know, night and day, man. I'm excited. I know a lot of people, Euro snobs, look back at the MLS, look down at the MLS now, but, you know, if you look at some of these leagues, Santiago, like La Liga, La Serie A, you know, what were those leagues after 20, 25 years, you know? And the MLS, it's done an amazing job.
You know, it's interesting because it feels like we're living in a moment of growth. And, like, I mean, we got to take a moment. I mean, we got to take advantage of this opportunity. With MLS expanding with all these teams, do you think they eventually have to create a regulation promotion system, you think?
Brother, yeah. I know a lot, as you know. Oh, I know a lot of people that were up for the presidency of the U.S. Soccer, and I believe Eric Ronaldo is one of them that said that he's in favor of that. I know the lawyer, or one of the gentlemen that owns Miami FC, that, you know, he's trying to. I think it was sue. What was it? Sue the, you know, U.S. Soccer or whatever.
Commissioner or
promotion and
has like an Italian name.
Yes. Yes. And he is Brazilian.
Oh, okay.
But maybe his last name, yes, Italian. I can't remember. It crosses my mind. No, but I think right. Anyways, I think in the United States, it's going to be tough about promotion or relegation because it's, you know, Americans' ownership of millionaires are not used to that. And you're going to tell a loaner, look, if your team doesn't go good, you're going to lose millions and millions of dollars by getting relegated. I don't know. I wish it would. I think as you know, man, I mean, everybody out there listening to this, promotion, relegation is the best. Look at me. I'm a huge Aston Villa supporter. And we got a game coming up this Saturday for the championship playoff final for the third final spot for promotion. So, you know, I'm pins the needles for this Saturday for that game, Aston Villa Fulham in Wembley, and I think it just adds to excitement. Will it happen in the United States? I don't know about that. Too much money involved.
I agree. I think there's a lot of bureaucracy in politics and a whole lot of business owners just to get used to it. It's going to take a lot of lecturing and a lot of workshops to get that, but I don't think it'll be done. World Cup is coming up. Who are your top teams to win it?
You want me to repeat what everybody's going to say?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know what, Brad? I'll say, okay. So I'm going to ask you, is Germany on your squad or teams?
Yes, Germany. Okay. Like, I chose Germany and Brazil, like, as my top two, and dark horse is Spain.
Oh, look at that. Yeah. I know. That's a good one, a dark horse.
Yeah.
I think, after what happened to the disaster in Brazil, after people are, with knowing Iniesta, Xavi, and everything, I think people are maybe a little bit down on Spain, but I think that's a good choice, man. I'm with you. I'll go with Germany, Brazil. France, I don't know. I saw them in the game against Colombia in Paris, a game Colombia won, and I don't know, man. I know Santiago. When I think of teams like France and Spain, let's take the Spain. I'm old school. I think of those teams back where, the noose would get a little bit tighter for them as, in the important games. And I don't know. That scares me about those teams. You could say Belgium, I guess, but Argentina, forget about it. I mean, forget about them, at least in my opinion. The only thing that scares me about Brazil, and I'll tell you what, Santiago, I don't know what you think about it, but the loss of Dani Alves, who is going to be the captain of Brazil. Let's face for his demeanor, the way he acts and everything. For me, Neymar is not a captain. But for me, his loss, yes, Dani Alves got older, but he's the one guy that could tell Neymar in his face, dude, shut up and play. Nobody else in that team, not even the coaches, could talk to Neymar like that. And, I think that's a huge loss for him. I don't know. What do you think?
Dani Alves was towards the end of his career. I mean, I think Brazil can handle, it without him. If they have Marcelo, I mean, I'm cool. But, man, they have, Gabriel Jesus. They got Neymar. They got Fabinho, Coutinho. They got a good squad. Now, obviously, left backs and right backs are become forwards, not defenders. They go back up and forth. But I think Brazil will be fine.
Right.
Because, they probably have some kid in the back burner that's probably as good as him. Maybe.
Correct. I mean, let's face it, even some of the guys on the bench could start for, as we say, and other teams and stuff. I look at Germany, what they did in the last Confederations Cup, a lot of those guys on the bench, could start for a lot of teams. So that's why I'm excited about those two teams. I don't know.
Will you be doing anything for the World Cup?
Yeah, I'm going to be working for a couple of networks. I got down in Uruguay. I also got writing something for one of their main websites down there, and something for a company up in the UK. So I'm going to be doing stuff. There's still a possibility that I might make it to Russia last second, but a lot of stuff I'm going to be based out of here. I'm going to be doing something for, hopefully for BN, that has to do with, some of the local stories here in the United States, some of the players that are out there that play here. As a matter of fact, for a station in Uruguay, I'm going to interview Nico Lodero next week. So, man, I'm busy, man. The World Cup is a busy time. It's a lot of fun, as you know.
Speaking about BN Sports, man, BN Sports has grown dramatically. I remember back in 2012, I was talking to Phil Shane, and he was like, yeah, it'll be first streaming, but then it'll be on DirecTV, but it slowly rolled out. But you guys have almost every league except the Premier League. So I'm really excited what's going to happen in like the next couple of years. So,
no, I am. The beauty of BN Sport is that I'm working for them, and it's always not only if you're not only a football fan, but if you're a fan of other non-Main Street sports, whether it's baseball, NBA, NHL, which, I love the NHL. For example, here's a perfect example. America Centenario, was it 2 years ago? In the middle of a tournament, Doha, maybe some people don't realize, but BN Sports is owned by Doha, the Qatari royal family, and they called and they said, Julian, we need you to go cover Formula One in Montreal and the Canadian Grand Prix. What do you know about it? Well, of course I follow. Okay, we need you. We're going to fly you out to, you know, to Montreal. I'm like, but I got the Centenario. They're like, no, don't worry about it. In between two of the games, we're going to fly you 1-2 days, and we're going to fly. So I flew out there, and I said, this is the beauty of being sport. Sports that if you are a true sports fan, because I think, you know, Santiago, I don't know how you feel about it. Some people say they're on a sports fan, but what are they following? You know, American football, basketball, hockey, and, you know, maybe soccer. That's it. I don't know about you, but I'm a sports fan. And being sports, that's, I'm not giving them the plug, but I'm just telling you the truth, is that, you know, they cover those sports. And, you know, the best is yet to come, because I'm always talking to them, and they always got something cooking. You know, 1 year, was it 2-3 years ago, I was going down in Trinidad to cover one of the opening round qualifiers for the United States. They gave me a call, and they said, hey, I know you're supposed to go back to Seattle, back home in 2 days, but we need you in Houston. And I go, for what? World Weightlifting Championships. I'm like, you guys cover that? And they're like, yeah. I go, we need you out there. I'm like, I'm there. And I go, I love it. I don't know about you, Santiago, but two squirrels boxing, I'll watch it.
Julian, you have an amazing job, by the way.
It ain't that bad. It's like I tell my friends. I get paid to watch sports, man. What more do you want? If I have a girlfriend, I get married. Honey, you watch too much sports. Honey, this is what I get paid to. You like the Mercedes you're driving? I've got to watch this game.
Yeah. Really curious what's how Fox Sports will do the World Cup and also Telemundo's. It'll be their first time because, you know, it's always been with ESPN and Univision.
Oh, man. You know, I think they do a great job in Fox and Telemundo. I've got friends on both sides, and, you know, I think they do a great job. But, you know, it's all the reports, you know, once the United States got eliminated in Trinidad, the next day or even that night, the reports how, you know, the United States not making the World Cup, how much of a financial hit Fox took after winning the rights. I think it is going to be a drop-off. Because, you know how it is, son. You have people, you ask, hey, do you like soccer? Yeah, but every 4 years. And if the United States is playing, you know, that magical run they had in South Africa, you know, people that didn't care about soccer watching it. But I think those guys have such a talented team, you know, both on Fox and Telemundo, that it's going to be great. Man, at the end of the day, if you're a soccer lover, you're going to watch. And, again, those two networks do an amazing job. You know, I watch them all the time, like I'm sure you do too.
Yeah, it's they're all pretty good job, and it's interesting because we have it easier here, like in the States, to watch soccer. Other parts of the world, it's difficult to watch like all the leagues. We have all the access.
You know, hey, you know, so get this. 3 years ago, I went to a wedding in Berlin. The following day, I decided to take a train ride to, where is it? I went to Prague. I'm in my hotel room, and I turn on the TV. Santiago, you're not going to believe this. It's one of the outskirts of Prague. I turn on the TV, and the first thing that pops up, Orlando City. Wow. Against New York Red Bulls. I was like, you know, wow, I thought in the United States we had more access than any other place, you know, and just sports, which is the beauty of it. But I was like, when I saw that, I'm like, this is amazing, the growth of the MLS, but it is soccer. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like you said, here in the United States, the accessibility we had here for sports is amazing. Santiago, when I was growing up, I remember the only soccer I like are the major clubs. I love Bayern Munich. The reason is because when I was a kid in the 70s, I was a small boy, the only thing they had was, what's the name of the show? This is German soccer. Soccer Made in Germany. I can't believe I got a brain fart. So back in the day, that's the only thing you'd watch. You'd watch pay-per-view. You'd have to go to a restaurant that would show games. My parents
full disclosure, are Colombian. So to watch any games from Colombia, whether it's Copa Libertadores or watching, you know, Copa America or watching the World Cup, it was all pay-per-view. And you pay like $50, $75 to sit in a, you know, stuffed restaurant and watch these games. And to see now the accessibility, not only soccer, but these other sports here in the United States, I mean, you really can't complain, brother. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I remember back in the day when I had to go, like, my parents are also Colombian, and we had to go to a bar or to a restaurant and pay, like, you know, $20 at the door plus food and drinks. And I remember watching the Colombia-Argentina game. It was 5-0. It was historic. And I was like, man, why did I have to go to a restaurant? Now I can sit in your couch and just watch the game.
Right. And I, you know what? It's sad. It's funny you say that because there's a bar here in Seattle. I'll give him a quick little plug called the Georgian Dragon. It's the most, you know, I guess, well, if you're a true soccer fan, that's where everybody watches the game. And I was talking to one of the owners was 2 weeks ago watching the Champions League semis. And it was an afternoon game, as you know, it was Tuesday, Wednesday, those games for semis Champions League. And I said, man, I thought there'd be more people here. And they said, you know what killed us? It's killing us, not only our bar, but other bars. And now it's so accessible to watch some of these games just at home. The same thing you said, Santiago. It's, you know, it's easier to just stay at home where it's comfortable. And, yeah, maybe it was a Saturday game, more people show up. And I don't know about you, Santiago. I don't know how you feel. When I want to watch a game, I like to be, you know, in the middle of, you know, the bar, you know, fans rooting. I love seeing that, man. And that's, you can't compare that to being at home. I'm sorry, I can't.
I agree. I prefer being around the people. When they score, you're jumping around and everything. But speaking about the Champions League, who do you have for this weekend, Liverpool versus Real Madrid?
Brother, gosh. You know what? I think where all the betting and everything's going, I'm going to go with Real Madrid. You know, it's just the experience, man. Prime time players, but... you know, I think Keylor Navas, I don't care what anybody says, one of the top three goalkeepers in the world. He's been hot. You know, you look at what's-his-face, Cristiano Ronaldo, maybe didn't have the best semifinal series against Bayern Munich, but he's a prime-time player. I don't care what anybody thinks. And, you know, it's just a more experience. I know James Milner, he's maybe a little bit iffy for Liverpool, Chamberlain, but we know his situation, so... I don't know, man. I'm going to go with Real Madrid in this game, maybe like a 3-1. And I guess it all plays. To me, you know what's going to be the key? It's going to be Marcelo, you know, obviously playing on the left side against Mo Salah, who obviously plays on the right side for Liverpool. Because, as we all know, Marcelo likes to attack. And he's played great this year. And maybe leaves some space behind, which Zinedine Zidane obviously knows that. They're going to have to find a way to control him. Either Marcelo stays a little bit back and help out on defense. He's not the greatest defender of all time. But if he could kind of, if he pushes Marcelo up and Mo gets behind him, you know, how could he control that? I don't know. How do you see it?
I mean, I'm a Liverpool fan, so my heart says Liverpool, but my mind says Real Madrid. You're right. They have the experience. I'm sorry. They do. But we'll see. I mean, if Mo Salah is the real deal, he'll show it this game, and we'll see what happens. But
you are totally right. I think if he, you know, if there's a stage that he could prove he's not a one season wonder, you know, this is going to be. And I'll be full disclosure. I said it before. Champions League final. Yeah. What I got early in the day, I got Aston Villa against Fulham. So that's all I'm concerned about. The heck with the Champions League. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, which is on the same day. On ESPN Plus, who do you have between Fulham and Aston Villa? Hey, Aston Villa with John Terry.
Yes, brother. You know what? I was never a huge John Terry fan, you know, when he played at Chelsea. But he's brought stability to that team, brother. That back line. I think the team's played, you know, great. They didn't play a good, you know, playoff series against Bolo. We won 1-0. If I played there. But Villa won 1-0 in the first leg. Second leg, it was 0-0. If they play the way they played against Borough, they're not going to win. But I'm excited. The key for a lot of people, if they don't follow Villa, is Jack Grealish. And now
You haven't heard of Jack Grealish, guys? I'll tell you right now, 2022, the World Cup in Qatar, I'll tell you what, if he continues ascending, he will be on that team. He plays as a number 10, really, for England, which, you know, he's an amazing young player. Jack Grealish, he used to be a little bit of a knucklehead just a couple of years ago. He's matured, and he's the key. If he could get this team, you know, rolling, I don't think the games are too big for him. You know, I think we got a chance, and our goalkeeper, Sam Johnson, who's, you know, on loan for Man United, he's just been fabulous, man. So I got my fingers crossed, man. Let's see Aston Villa, man. Villa. Let's go Lions.
Yeah, I'll be going for Aston Villa, even though Fulham was where, you know, Clint Dempsey played. But I'm going for Aston Villa. And who do you have for tonight? Houston Rockets at the Warriors.
Oh, man. You know what? You can't go against, brother. I cannot go against Curry, man. You know, Steph Curry, he's just an amazing player. You watch the way, okay, he had not the best of games. 2 games ago, comes back, drops a couple of F-bombs to show he's back. But when players are just, you know, like messy, if he doesn't have a bad game, you know he's going to show up when the team needs him. And just like LeBron, he's going to show up, and I think being at home, and of course, if the Warriors win tonight, brother, it's over. I don't care what, you know, and, you know, I think James Harden, I think, you know, unfortunately, I feel for players when I think Santiago. I don't know about you, but I feel for players sometimes. They make, you know, I don't feel that bad because they make more money than I'll make in my lifetime, obviously, in one season. But James Harden, he's kind of showing his colors then. The biggest games where the team really needs the most, he kind of withers, brother. I don't know. How do you see that series? Because, you know, I thought it was going to be Houston running away, but I think, I don't know, I think the Warriors are just going to take game, you know, the game tonight.
I'm with you. I think Harden has not come up big on the playoffs. I guess you might consider him a choker, but it is the Warriors. Good team, and I knew they were going to win it. Like I was telling someone else, like, you know, the Warriors laid their foundation. They got these guys from their rookie years, you know, straight off from like the draft. And they just, I mean, outlasted, you know, this long. Obviously, adding KD is like cherry on top. But the Warriors, man, this is our Lakers of the 80s. This is like the Bulls of our 90s. I mean, this is the moment. We're living a dynasty. And we'll see what happens. Do you think Cleveland's going to win against Boston after tying up last night?
You know what? I'll tell you what. I mean, God, did you think, like the Celtics, the way they played this last game, that's like me, you, two donkeys and a banana peel plane. I mean, we could have beat them. They were missing dunks, layups. I mean, that was crazy, man. And I said one thing. I'll admit, full disclosure, I am a Heat fan. I am originally from Miami. And it's one of the things, seeing the maturity of LeBron when he first joined the Heat, when he just didn't have that killer instinct. And now he has it. And I'll tell you what, when they went down, 2-0 in the series, I'm like, just LeBron kind of like get a second wind. And he's going to take, you know, they're going to run away with it. And I kind of see that, you know. It's, you know, I think what the Celtics need, and you know it, and everybody knows it. I mean, if they had Kyrie Irving, I'm like, no, Celtics are going to win it. But they don't, which is an amazing job by Brad Stevens, the job he's done, amazing coach. But I know, man, I can't go against LeBron, even though, you know, Celtics at home, they're undefeated in these playoffs, so. I don't know. It's going to be a tough one, brother.
Everyone says the same thing. You can't bet against LeBron. I was going for Boston after 2 games, but one guy was saying, it was just 2 games. You could still come back and tie it up, but Cleveland seems like, we'll see. I mean, I got to take it 1 game at a time. So we'll see where Boston goes in game 5. Obviously, it's probably a must-win game for them because it's a home match. So, Julian, how can people reach you?
Brother, you can go ahead on, I'm on there on Twitter at Julian TV Report. Also on there on what you would call it on, I just drew a blank because I was thinking of the NHL hockey right now. Sorry about the guy. I just saw
LinkedIn?
NHL hockey. Sorry. I'm a Panther fan and I'm going for Vegas because the Panthers are so stupid to get rid of their head coach a couple of years ago, and now he has Vegas in the finals. So sorry about that. I had to throw that one in. I'm just frustrated right now. But you could just follow me on Julian TV Report, man, and I'm always on there tweeting some stuff. I don't tweet like a lot of other guys that you know, every little single thing. I just, you know, whatever's important. Like some of the guys out there on Twitter, you know, like yourself that do this, you know, 24/7, are so much involved and do such a great job that I just throw my stupid little two cents in there and tell you how bad my teams are and how much they make me suffer, like, you know, the Dolphins and the Marlins and everybody else, man. My teams suck.
Julian, thanks for coming on to the Sports Cats. Any final words?
Brother, go Golden Knights. Number two, let's cross our fingers. Since the United States couldn't make it, let's cross our fingers with Colombia. Let's not get too overconfident. I just want to say thank you so much, Santiago. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure. It was a lot of fun talking sports to somebody that knows as much sports as you, man. It's a lot of fun, and I hope to talk to you soon again.
Julian Gonzalez, thanks for coming on to the SportsCast.
All right, brother. Have a great day, man. Thanks again for having me on.